Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to the Living Free Show on 3CR, 855 kilohertz on your AM radio dial, and 3CR on digital radio. I'm Anne, and I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present, and to acknowledge that the material and spiritual connection of Aboriginal people to this land was stolen from them. Each week on the Living Free Show, we showcase one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drug, alcohol, gambling, food, and other addictions. Our guests share their recovery stories and highlight that shared experience saves lives. Before we start, I'd like to remind you that the Living Free Show may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm, and family violence. Please practice self-care and care of others when listening. Today in the studio, I am pleased to be joined by David. David's a member of Al-Anon, which most of you will know is a program in which people support each other in recovery from being affected by another person's addiction to alcohol. And we know that the effects of that can be quite devastating. So welcome, David.
Yes, glad to be here. Looking forward to this.
Glad to have you. Do you want us just to start? Do you want to start us off just by telling us? Just tell us who you are, where your life all started.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Sydney.
That's all right.
Went to school there. Before that, a little town called Tumut, I was brought up. My father was the local GP in that town. And we moved basically. Well, I think what happened was when you live in a country town in remote New South Wales, Dad wanted to send us to boarding school, and Mum didn't want to do it, so she decided she won the argument eventually, and we actually moved to Sydney just to prevent us having to go to a boarding school. To keep the family together, so to speak. Yeah, so I grew up there and then worked for about 10 years. The short of it is 10 years working and then off to England for 10 years. Had a great time over there. That was a wonderful experience. And then back to Australia, and here I am.
Here you are.
Here I am today.
3CR, 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy. Okay, so take me back then. You said your mother did not want you to go to boarding school, so it sounds like she was a person who your emotional welfare was important to her.
Yeah, well, I think she knew that I was the quiet kind of kid that might get bullied, and guess what? That's what happened. I was really badly bullied at school, and I don't know the reasons why. You know, I think it's probably an element of the disease of alcoholism, you know, people-pleasing, you know, being a yes-man sort of thing. Not really standing up for myself. If somebody else was, everyone else is right and I'm wrong. Type thinking. Yeah.
So this was a boys' school,
boarding school.
Yeah. So you're talking high school now, or all the way through this bullying?
Mainly high school.
Yeah.
I was okay in the local public school. That was in Lane Cove in Sydney. And then I moved to the Catholic Jesuit school, and that's where the bullying really started.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You didn't come across Alan, what's his name? Who's the guy who's on? Alan Jones?
Alan Jones. No, I must have missed him.
Different school? Or was he from that same school?
He could well have gone to that school.
Yeah.
But I don't think so. Another famous person did, and who I knew.
Uh-huh.
We had classroom tidy up duty.
Okay.
Myself and Tony Abbott.
Oh.
I know. I
amazing. Yeah. We've never uttered those words in this radio station before. all right. So you just said that you think that the bullying, you don't know what caused it, but you knew you're identifying yourself as a little people pleaser even back as a young man, and you're relating it to alcoholism. So can you tell us about that, please, how that happened?
Well, alcoholism in my life was through my mother. Mm-hmm. And she during a very important phase of my life, which was early high school, she was drinking. And it basically, I was lucky in a way that because Dad was a GP, he was able to afford nannies to come in. So when Mum overdosed with drink, she would probably go into a nursing home or something similar to that to recover, and Dad would have a nanny come in and look after us and cook our meals and have us keep us well fed and the washing done and all the usual treats. So possibly from Mum's point of view, that was a relief for her that she knew that we were being looked after. So, but eventually she found AA and had a wonderful recovery.
Did she?
Yeah.
That's a good story. How old were you when she found AA?
I was about 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is, my maths teacher was also in AA, and he often used to talk about Al-Anon and to try to, yeah. And
to you or to the class?
To the whole class, wow. the whole maths class.
Uh-huh, interesting.
He'd spend about 15 minutes of the maths class talking about AA and Alcoholics Anonymous and, Al-Anon, sorry.
So going back to the nanny, would you now identify that as both a destabilizing thing but a protective thing too? Is it both?
These are the nannies that Dad got.
Yeah, that situation of your mother coming and going and nannies coming and going. It would be destabilizing, but maybe also protective.
It was very destabilizing. Mm. It just meant, see, I was quite, as I said before, I was quite badly bullied at school. And the whole time I was being bullied, which was about fourth and fifth forms, I never once mentioned it at home I was bullied, because it was just part, the big elephant in the room was Mum's alcoholism, and that was the focus of the whole family. So my needs and problems were very much not shared.
Absolutely. Yep. That's a very succinct way of almost summing up the condition, the situation of an adult, of a child in an alcoholic family.
Exactly.
And so you said that you'd become a people pleaser. Can you talk about how you understand that process of becoming a people pleaser in the context of your mother's illness?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think really, I was looking for some sort of acknowledgement, because in my family of origin, I was just the big brother, and
were you the eldest child?
I was the eldest child. That's right. And as I said before, you know, in our family, Mum, the alcoholic, drew all the attention and concern by Dad, any issues that us kids, and I was one of four, the eldest of four, any issues we had were secondary and were never brought up. So we just let it go. We suffered in silence, basically.
Yep. And you felt that if you just sort of stayed under the radar but kind of looked after other people, you would be safe in some way? Was that why become a people pleaser? It's what
I think it was sort of the way I was trained. It
uh-huh.
was
it was
how you were a real person. You did things for other people, and you made them feel good. That was the template from which I learned my behaviours.
Yeah,
and there was a the trouble is, when I did apply those characteristics in the school situation that I was in, I was treated as a bit of a yes man. I was a bit not really standing up for, always trying to do things for other people. And, of course, that opened me up for being quite badly bullied.
Yep. We might leave that there. We'll have a little break and we'll be right back. Thank you so much, David.
If you or someone you care for is struggling with a mental illness or other disability and you need someone to talk to, you can call the Wellways Helpline. Wellways Helpline is a volunteer support and referral service that provides information to people experiencing mental health issues or other disabilities, as well as their family, friends and carers. We're here to talk if you are feeling socially isolated, seeking information about mental health or mental health services, or just need someone to talk to. As a peer-based service, everyone working at Wellways Helpline has a lived experience of mental health issues or disability. Wellways Helpline is a national service and operates Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., excluding public holidays. So if you're struggling yourself or are struggling to help someone else, please call Wellways Helpline on 1300 111 500. That's 1300 111 500. Wellways supports 3CR.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM, streaming at 3cr.org.au, 3CR digital, podcasting or audio on demand. Interested in mental health issues? Then tune into Brainwaves every Wednesday at 5 PM. Brainwaves is a peer-produced and presented program addressing issues that may affect you. 3CR, inclusive radio, making your voice heard.
This is a Living Free show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. If you would like to listen to one of our many podcasts, then you can find us on your preferred podcast platform or just Google 3CR Living Free and check out our website. Today, my guest is David and we're chatting about living in a family where someone is struggling with the disease of alcoholism and what the effects of that are on the other members of the family, specifically on David. So welcome back, everyone, and welcome back, David.
Yeah, well, enjoying myself so far.
Good. Would you mind talking a little bit more about your experience of bullying? Because I think it's well acknowledged that that's a formative experience that affects us throughout life. So can you talk about that, please?
What happened was... my father wanted me to go to an expensive Jesuit private school. It's Riverview in Sydney. And unfortunately, I failed the exam. So I went to the local high school. And that was fine because I'd also gone to the local state primary school. And I knew I had all my friends would all gone to the same high school. So I had a good, wonderful... connection there with friends and what have you. So I was suddenly pulled out of after year 12, I think, or whatever it's year second form anyway.
Oh, year eight.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
And that's when I got through the exams and I went off to Riverview. But this is sort of a third of the way through high school, so I'd already established a wonderful bunch of friends. And to be dropped into this school of all males, because the high school had been mixed, you know, males, females.
Had the civilizing effect of the female students.
Right. Which was interesting. And then to suddenly get dropped into this very strange atmosphere of a different, totally different approach of the private school, the Catholic private school run by the Jesuits, was a real shock. And I had an awful lot of trouble fitting in there because I came in late. A lot of the children had already established friendship groups and friends, and so a lot of the groups was already settled, and I came in as a complete stranger. So I was very much left alone for the first maybe for year that... year 10, 11, being isolated. And I remember just walking around at lunchtime wondering, you know,
yeah,
who I could talk to. But eventually I did make friends and I formed a small group of close friends. It came by, but it took a long time. It took all of third form, as I remember it, and so for fourth, fifth and sixth form. But unfortunately the bullying continued, and I won't mention what they called me because it's a bit rude, but it was just very demeaning, extremely demeaning. But as I said before, the trouble was I was never in a situation where I could go to mum or dad about it because of mum's alcoholism. That was the elephant in the room. And I couldn't really. As a 14 and 15 year old, you don't want to rock the boat, or don't feel you deserve to rock the boat.
And that was the case, wasn't it, for kids in those days anyway, without the elephant in the room.
That's right.
Okay, can you take us into your adult life now and explore a little bit for us how you went into life as an adult, given that background of an alcoholic mother and this bullying experience?
Yeah, well, it made me very, very cautious. And but I to be totally honest, the main effect of mum's alcoholism on me was the lack of how to get involved in a relationship that's intimate. I was okay with friends at school, but whenever there, and especially at the high school, which was co-ed, my relations with the opposite sex were very clumsy and very people-pleasing. It didn't work. And I was, I remember one, I was told by one particular girl to, you know, two rude words, but rhymes with sort of going off.
Yes, yes.
Go away.
Yes.
But at that critical, the sad part about it is at that critical stage of year 10, suddenly being dropped into a boys' school with...
you're not going to learn much there about how to get on with girls.
Yeah, that's right. So, and as someone who wasn't really good at making friends, it took a while. I did make friends at that school, but it just took a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm.
And can you take us now into your working life then? And were there relationships with women later on as you became an adult man?
Very, very few, very, very sporadic. I mean, the bottom line is with me is the big issue was relationships.
Yep.
And developing relationships.
Yep.
Either if one started, I'd either run away, or just show disinterest, strong disinterest in that person.
Mm-hmm.
A real fear of dropping into a very close relationship. And I don't know what the basis of that is. It may have something to do with mum's alcoholism in those early years and me not learning. I suspect that because going back to one thing I haven't mentioned is one of my earliest memories as a very small baby / child is being in a cot and banging the cot against the wall behind it as I stood there trying to get attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect it was because mum was drinking.
She might have been out of it for a period of time there.
That's
when you
right. Mm. So I learned how to be ruthlessly independent.
Yep.
And not to let anyone get close. And I think that's one of the major aspects of my upbringing that really has... hounded me to this very day.
Yep.
The problems with relationships have been interesting. Any relationships that did start up, any sign of moving away or any I was hypersensitive to any sort of negativity in that relationship, I would run away. I didn't want to be part of it. I didn't want to engage with that sort of situation. So the easy one for me was to go back to that comfortable space of being an independent person. And so that's what I did.
One thing I remember hearing in Adult Children of Alcoholics, another fellowship, not Al-Anon, but using the 12 steps, was that adult children of alcoholics seem to swing between intense, painful involvement and intense, painful isolation. They find it hard to just get that balance of just how to get on with another person at that intimate level. And I'm wondering, is it to do with your mum, you know, coming and going all the time? So
she was coming and going.
Yeah. So you knew that you couldn't rely on her just to be there, or if you needed her, or
Yeah, that's right.
Mm. And so, what work did you end up doing?
Well, I chose a people-pleasing profession. basically, my first job was fixing cash registers in a supermarket in Sydney, and that was fine. So, but the job, that particular job of fixing things for people, what I sought for was that wonderful feeling when the person I fixed their cash register for said, "David, oh, that's great, you fixed my cash register, so thank you very much." I fed off that. Getting that as compliments was just so important to me, and it was such a motivator for me to keep doing that, which was a danger in a way, because if it went wrong, and there were times when it did go wrong, when I didn't fix it properly, then I would be very hurt and quite degraded, feeling minimised.
You would just be appalled at yourself for making a mistake. So your identity was tied up too much in...
Very much in the job. That's right. That's how I defined myself. Mm-hmm. I was David the cash register fixer, Superman, a type of Superman anyway.
Yep. And you went on to other jobs where you were offering that sort of support to people, weren't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of them was a Big Pond support line. So I was a person that if you had problems with the Big Pond or your internet connection, you'd ring up Big Pond, and I'd be one of the persons that you would answer. So that was very much helping out people.
Mm-hmm.
I remember an incident once where a guy phoned up and he had a few problems with his computer, and he couldn't work out what was wrong. He tried everything, and he'd phoned dozens of times. And I said, did you try a new cable? And he said, what, the cable? Can't be the cable. But having worked in IT for a long time, I knew it could be the cable. And, of course, he did. It was the cable. And he managed to call the call centre, and it's hard to track down because you can't decide who to talk to in a call centre. You just get who's available. But he managed to find me somehow and say, it's the cable. I can't believe it. You'd found the problem, you know. So I really quite felt very positive about that. So that's all part of this people pleasing. That sort of situation's right up my alley. That's where I feel whole as a person.
Yep.
And I've helped them out, and and I applied that principle for probably too many years without actually looking after myself a bit more, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautifully described, because, I mean, on the face of it, we talked about this before, on the face of it, it's a lovely thing to be helpful, and you've done a lot of good in the world by being helpful, but it's when it gets out of balance and your identity's dependent on it, and that you feel devastated if you fail to do it, then it's a problem.
Mm.
Yeah. Would you mind now, David, taking us up to the point where you walked into an Al-Anon meeting?
Yes. Well, I was thinking about that, but one of the this goes back to my maths teacher, and I think, how did he? But he was a member of AA, and he'd spent half the maths lesson talking about AA and Al-Anon. Whether he knew, I suspect he did know that my mother was an alcoholic.
Oh, he might have known your mother from the fellowship. Yeah.
But this was before, Well, maybe it had gone through the grapevine somehow. It got to my maths teacher that, and he, being a member of ADA, obviously was attuned to, you know, any of the kids in that his classes that may be suffering from that sort of situation, having an alcoholic parent. And it turned out he was right. His mum was obviously had a drinking problem, and and this is very unusual for a maths teacher to get involved with the personal issues of your family, but he did. And but as a member of AA, and he got mum going to meetings. I used to drive them. When I first got my license, my first drive in the car was dropping mum and him off at a...
That's an unusual story.
At an AA meeting. And he turned out to be a very, very, very positive person. He was a good example of the type of recovery that can be made through Alcoholics Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, for me... as I was growing up and having issues with relationships, especially with deep intimate relationships, and I suspect that this was partially due to the lack of a template that my mother that couldn't provide.
Mm-hmm.
Basically running away from relationships. I just remained ruthlessly independent, went to England for 10 years on my own, came back on my own. Couldn't, for whatever reason, and I still probably don't know deep down why I had problems with deep relationships, but I knew it was a problem, and I thought, this is where I've got to get some help. I did see a shrink for a few years, but that didn't seem to help, and then I found Al-Anon.
So the work of that math teacher in sowing that seed... You carried that through your adult life until you needed to plant it, in a way.
That's right, yeah.
Wow. Tell us about your first meeting.
My first meeting, yes. It was at Brunswick in Melbourne. And it was really quite amazing because the welcome I got into that meeting was just unbelievable. I just thought, wow, this is incredible. It was a very big meeting, so a little bit impersonal, but I was looked after well. And but also the lead up to that, I mean, I knew in the back of my mind, and for the previous 10 to 15 years, I thought I must go to Al-Anon because this is what my maths teacher mentioned. But I never got round to it for some reason. I could have gone to it in England, but I didn't. Mm. I just thought, well, maybe I don't really need to do it. But after that first meeting at Brunswick in 2017, I thought, these people are great. This is going to be a positive experience. Because for someone like me who has difficulty with relationships, going into an Al-Anon meeting is really therapy, because everyone talks to each other, everyone says hello, everyone treats everyone else with respect. You get a chance to say what you think in a group situation, which is very rare for somebody like me outside of an Al-Anon situation.
And what you feel.
And what I feel and how I'm feeling right now. So it was like it opened the floodgates really for a lot of emotional development that I probably lacked previous to that time.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to open up in an AA meeting is such a treasure mm-hmm. for me, and mm-hmm. it's been total therapy for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Solidarity Breakfast, your Saturday morning serving of union and working news, current events, opinion and talkback. Every Saturday, 7:30 till 9 a.m. here on 3CR, 855 on your AM dial.
Left after breakfast. 38 years of information, insights, analysis and opinion. Just plain old common sense, really. 8:30 a.m. on Fridays.
This is a Living Free show on 3CR Digital Radio and live streaming on 3cr.org.au/streaming. Today I'm chatting to David about recovery from the effects of alcoholism. We haven't talked about recovery yet, but that's what we're going to do now, all the way to the end of the show. So, David, you've just told us about your first Al-Anon meeting and how Al-Anon allowed you to relearn how to be in relationships and in a healthy way. What else did you learn?
Oh, I learned that basically I learned to be honest with myself. I learned to be able to put into words how I'm feeling at a particular time, which is, I know that sounds quite obvious, but for me that was actually a major step forward. And it's one of the things I could do in an Al-Anon meeting. It took me a while, though. In my first few meetings, it was just observing what was happening. But I learned that, people could share their experience, strength and hope about their relationship with an alcoholic, and that I could do the same. And probably because Mum had already passed away at the time I went into a meeting, so my mother was my qualifier, but I still was working with the results of growing up in an alcoholic home, and I knew that I had problems with relationships, especially intimate relationships, and I knew there was a problem, but I wasn't sure what it was. I had a hint that it might be alcoholism and Mum not being there for us four kids when we were growing up to learn how to have relationships, you know.
What did you hear a lot of people in the meeting telling that same story? Like, you know, like, did you identify with people and go, oh, this is not just me?
Yes, I'm sure that happened. I can't remember specific instances, but it often happens because basically people are sharing, in meetings, people are sharing about their alcoholic husband or wife and the experience they're going on. And I immediately could relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
So the wonderful thing, the outcome of that, I've been in the program now since, you know, about 9 years. So what it's really shown me was, first of all, that I'm not the only one going through that sort of situation or had gone through that situation. But also how alcoholism can affect us, and by going to meetings, I can hear other people's experience, strength and hope about how they've handled it.
Yes.
This is not to do anything to do with the alcoholic. This is to do with how I am reacting to that type of situation, that type of relationship. And that's so important because it can be a bit of a nightmarish and was a nightmarish situation with my family of origin. So, okay, so how does that translate into today and me today? I suppose it makes me very cautious about relationships. It's an area where I still have a lot of issues. I'm extremely cautious about moving into a very close, intimate relationships. And as I said before, I would get involved so far and then suddenly run away. And I'm aware of that actually happening right at this moment within a particular relationship. So I can feel that that warning sign is still there. And but thanks to the program, I've got a better handle on how I've been affected by alcoholism. And that it is a disease. They talk about it as I said before, a disease of relationships, a disease of relationships.
And it's, and not so much in AA, they call it a disease, but in Al-Anon they call it a family disease.
Yes.
And the insight there is that it's not just the alcoholic that's got the disease, the whole family's got it.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. What would Al-Anon, in what ways might Al-Anon help? You talked about, you know, being in a live situation now where you see that impulse to flee or whatever. How might Al-Anon help you when you recognize, because you talked about being honest with yourself, right? So you can see this now. How might an Al-Anon meeting or how might Al-Anon help you with that?
Yeah, well, it's just the dynamic within the meetings, and I go to 3 or 4 meetings a week, and I can hear my story over and over again, and you know, we talk about the experience, strength, and hope of the program, and of course I had a sponsor, and I did go through a few years ago now, mind you, through the 12 steps. And that was a great experience. Going through the 12 steps was very powerful because I remember when I got to step 4 and I looked back at it, and it was like fear was the big word. It was just fear of this happening, fear of that happening, fear of this relationship going wrong, fear of you'd say something wrong. You name it. It was all fear. I couldn't believe it. It was such a revelationary aspect of going through the 12 steps. Mm-hmm. The other steps were, I went through relatively calmly. They were challenging, but I went through them. So I was surprised about that. It was one of the great revelations about joining the program and Al-Anon and having a sponsor and going through them, through the steps. It was a very powerful experience for me.
I'm wondering if that relationship with the sponsor, was that a good example of doing the opposite? Like, did you feel like running away from the sponsor as well at any point, or running away from doing that step, or did you run towards it?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head there, because I actually ran away from it.
I actually did do it
later on, sort of at the end of the piece. I think it actually may have been quite a mutual thing as well, unfortunately. So I'm no longer... at that moment, I don't have a sponsor. But, so that was a real lesson for me. I think that when choosing a sponsor, you have to find someone who's pretty much on the same wavelength as I am, or you are, by that I mean... that you feel comfortable, that I feel comfortable around, that particular sponsor, with the one that I'm used to have, we weren't really on the same level.
Mm.
You know, it's very difficult to describe, but anyway,
it's a good lesson, though, isn't it? And maybe not on the same level to be you know, our friend forever, but definitely it was an important relationship for that process for you. Of going through that.
That's right.
Steps. So maybe that's a lesson, that we don't need to be completely loyal to and stay with everyone that we've ever had a relationship of any kind with. The relationships, you can move in and through them, and they have their own purpose at the time.
Yeah, well, that's it. Going through the 12 steps is a very good lesson in relationships. If you had said that to me before, I would have not believed it. But nowadays, I can see really it's. I mean, as I said before, they call it a disease of relationships, alcoholism.
Mm.
And going through the 12 steps really is turns the focus back onto me.
Yep.
And it really, and with a sponsor to go through to provide that feedback, because I think with me, I tended to rush through it rather than really
tick the boxes and get it done.
But with a sponsor, she was able to really dig down a bit and just say, well, what about this situation, what about that, what about this relationship, what about that,
mm-hmm.
what are you thinking about now, what's your behavior in this sort of situation. So it all came out really in step 4. As I said before, it was the and the amount of fear that I possessed inside of me about my relationships. So fear was the big word.
Now, fear being the big word is your big insight, right? So, and what ways has knowing that now about yourself and having that light word to put, you talked before about getting the words for it, and it's important to call it fear, has that enabled you to move away from the fear a bit or move through the fear or somehow deal with the fear better?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just going to an Al-Anon meeting is a wonderful experience. I think the really powerful thing for me was going to meetings was to develop trust in other people. I felt it was for the first time I really felt I could express my true feelings about a situation without judgmentalism and
without other people judging you.
Without other people judging me, and just being able to share my experience, strength and hope with life in general and specific instances that I may have not handled well, either in a personal relationship or a work relationship or whatever, I could bring it to the meeting.
Yep.
Usually a small meeting, not the big meetings, but there's one particular meeting I'm going to at the moment which is very, very good that way. There's only four people there, but it's a space where I can really, put my situation out there. And
so it still suits you to have a smaller group a quieter person and you just like a quieter experience of everything.
That's right. Yes, that's true. A big difference. My local meeting is the Brunswick meeting. It gets about 25 people.
That's healthy. Yeah,
it's very healthy.
Tell people where that is, just because it might be somebody right now thinking, I wouldn't mind going to a meeting in Brunswick. Where is it and when is it?
It's in Western Street, Brunswick, East Brunswick, actually, at the Scout Hall.
Okay. Yeah. On what?
Sunday night, 6 o'clock.
Okay. Prime you for the working week ahead.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, what else? Did your mother's, before you got to Al-Anon, did your mother's going to AA and presumably doing this work herself, did that change your relationship with her in any way, or did you notice her behaviour change when she was in AA?
Oh, yes, very much so. Very much for the better. The relationship I had with my mother was greatly enhanced when she started attending meetings. I remember I used to laugh because I got my license. I turned 18 at about the time she was attending meetings, and I loved driving. I got to drive Dad's car, and as soon as Mum was going to a meeting, say, "Do you want a lift? Do you want a lift?"
You're driving all over Sydney.
Yeah, you're driving all over Sydney. Which was true because I lived in one suburb sort of towards the city, and she'd go to meetings all over the city so far that I wouldn't go home. I'd just drive around or just do a bit of touring around the local area until the meeting finished, and then
sitting in the car park at Parramatta.
Yeah, exactly, until the meeting finished, and then home, pick up Mum, and then go home. So, yeah, that was a happy time.
Yep, that's great. That's great to hear. Good endorsement of AA too. Now, we've only got a minute left. So any final words for your last minute talking to the people of Melbourne?
Yeah, well, I think if anyone is still not sure about whether they should go to an Al-Anon or possibly an AA meeting, please do so. Any visitors are welcome. I found the companionship there fantastic. I think the plane of alcoholism affects so many people, and if I can connect with someone who's in a similar situation with a friend or relative who's drinking, and I can connect with that person, it's just a wonderful feeling, because I think alcoholism is such a destructive disease, and we need all the support we can get in that situation. mainly from the point of view of us who are affected by alcoholism, not the alcoholism itself.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So. Beautifully put. So it's not, it's, you could call it recovery or you could call it reconstruction.
Probably both.
Thanks so much, David.
That's all
for
right.
Coming in.
Thank you.
If you're concerned about drinking in a relative or friend and would like to find out more about Al-Anon, you can contact them on 1-300-252-666 or go to alanon.org.au. If you're concerned about your own drinking, you can contact Alcoholics Anonymous on 1-300-222-222 or go online at aa.org.au. If the content in the segment you've just listened to has raised questions or caused distress to you, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or visit lifeline.org.au. Coming up next, I think we have Belle and Moir. If so, enjoy. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned now for more Radical Radio on 3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.